Welcome to Cultsa Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Cultsa Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. And today we are talking with Kurt Grinnell, who is the tribe's policy representative. Kurt is a Jamestown Sklallam tribal member and has served on the Jamestown Tribal Council since 2004 and is the tribe's policy representative for the Natural Resources Department. And also joining us is Brent Vatopoulos, who is an aquaculture specialist with the University of Washington Sea Grant Program. And today we're going to be talking about a method used to grow shellfish in open water while protecting them from predation. Are they large enough to survive being out in one of the shellfish sanctuaries by a device called a flupsy? Let's start with you, Kurt. Kurt, could you describe what a flupsy is?
Well, a flupsy is just an acronym. It's actually a floating upweller system, and it's basically a seed nursery. And so it looks much like a dock. It has deep bins in there, anywhere from, depending on how big it is, say up to 20 bins. Mm-hmm. And those are just square bins. They have mesh on the bottom, and they sit down in the water, and the seed sits on top of the screen, and water is pulled up through the screen, feeding the seed, and then out through the trunk. It's out through the middle of the trough, we call it trunk, and out the back of the flupsy. So it's basically just feeding the seed so they can grow and get ready for their next stage in life.
How long has this kind of technology been around?
We have one that was from 1999, and they've been around longer than that. So they've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm. I understand you guys have one already in operation at John Wayne Marina.
We do. We have four separate. Oh. Two older ones and two of the newer style ones.
What is going on with one of these when they're running? I mean, We capture what one of these sounds like, but could you describe what one sounds like, what's going on mechanically?
Okay, so these are all electrical. There's no engine type gas engine on these. They're electric motors. We have two different styles. One is run by a paddle wheel, turned by an electric motor that drives the water, pulls the water up through the seed and out the back. And then we have a different style there that's also electric. It basically has kind of like a boat prop down underneath that pulls the water through the seed. Just a different style doing the same thing. And again, these, the water is pushed out either through the back of the flupsy or down or at an angle at the bottom of the flupsy, making sure those seeds get their nutrients.
Have you guys found this to be a pretty effective approach?
This is an excellent approach. I really think, outside the general idea has been the same throughout with all the flupsies, and there's many different styles of flupsies, but it's all that works the same. And it's just been just an amazing step forward for seed nurseries. It's really enabled aquaculture to take the next step forward too.
Yeah, I'm looking at some literature from Cornell University from their Cooperative Extension Program in New York, and they're obviously big fans of it. What's the downside to using something like this? As with everything, there has to be some downside, right?
Well, for us, I think finding the right location and having the right water quality and the right salinity and if there's enough nutrients in that particular body of water. It does take the right setting, and all the stars have to align. And then again, whether the community accepts shellfish aquaculture is another question too. Some people think that these are that these pollute the harbor and that sort of thing, and I it's just not true. These are shellfish. They live in our waters. They're common in our waters. And they're certainly not polluting like a motorized boats and that sort of thing.
I understand there's a movement to put one of these at Point Hudson Marina in Port Townsend. How's that project going?
Well, we're far, far away from that happening. We certainly need to have it permitted, and that's a long process. We're looking at 1 to 2 years away. So our interests are in, you know, to have a Flupsy there, perhaps in Point Hudson in the future. We think it'd be an excellent feature for the community, a very good learning tool to show young people, you know, students, you know, perhaps through the Marine Science Center, other avenues, where people's food comes from. And, you know, it would also help expand our production. One of the bottlenecks in oyster production is Flupsy space. Seed grow, I don't know, maybe 10% a week. So they grow exponentially, and you're always outgrowing your Flupsy space. And so we think that, it would draw a lot of tourism down there. I think a lot of people would have questions. I think a lot of people would like to come down there and hold some baby oyster seed. Most people just see oysters out on the ground. They're big, they're hard, or they taste good in the restaurant, but they don't know exactly how they start out and where they come from. And we'd certainly like to show people that aspect of the industry.
Do you know what species of oyster you'd be growing in there?
Yeah, we would. We're going to start off with Pacifics, but we're certainly going to see if Olympia oysters will tolerate this area. We don't know that as fact yet. That's just some of the things that we're going to be looking at in the future, but we're not there yet.
So is it the Olympia oyster that's the native oyster, or is it the Pacific? I forget.
Well, it's the Olympia oyster that's been here forever. And we do have, part of our department has some great projects and partnerships with other folks that are trying to bring the Olympia oyster back, because they've basically been over harvested and almost rendered extinct. So the Pacific oyster has been around the area for about 130 years, I believe. And so it's almost considered native now. It's been around so long, and that's the standard oyster that's grown here in the state.
Is there a burgeoning market for the Olympic?
We think so, but COVID has really stifled a lot of that growth. We don't know where we're going to be with restaurants and the industry, where everybody's struggling. Everybody's, you know, there's a question mark out there exactly where the industry's going. But we hope in the future that, yes, Olympia oyster will have a big impact on, you know, in the restaurant industry, and people will love them.
So, Brett, what are your thoughts on, and well, and you too, you as well, Kurt, on what the feasibility of the Olympic oyster comeback could be? I mean, does it look like it's a feasible prospect that it could make a substantial comeback?
Oh, I think so, definitely. Yeah, I think there are a lot of efforts statewide to bring back Olympias. Some of the more exciting ones are right in our neck of the woods here in Discovery Bay. They've been putting out shell stock, and that's what the Olympia oysters settle on. And they just put bare shell out in the tidelands, and they, you know, came back after a season, and they're covered with wild Olympias. So I think things are looking up for the Olympia oyster.
Is it, so this is a question for Kurt. So Kurt, are you guys using Olympia oysters in the Flupsy at John Wayne Marina?
We are not. We haven't gotten that far with it. Our people are out there in Squim Bay with that project. Mm-hmm. They're doing well. But we've not taken them to a commercial status yet. We have not done that.
So here's another question regarding, I know that there's been some concerns about impact to the environment, and what exactly, you know, would be the impact to the surrounding water from one of these devices?
In my opinion, is in any kind of food that is grown for consumption, you know, there is an impact. But what we see in aquaculture is a very, very small impact compared to other, you know, whether it's agriculture or other ways of, you know, growing our food, you know. So I'm going to see if Brent knows anything more than I do on this, but I really don't see a big impact. I know we have some studies there on Flupsies that showed no impact on the substrate and that sort of thing. Brent, do you know any more on this?
Yeah, I mean, in general, you know, I really specialize in sustainable aquaculture. And so, you know, sustainable food production is a huge thing. And I think, you know, the balancing of, you know, impacts and ecosystem services is what really makes shellfish in particular look great, because you don't really add anything to the water when you're growing an oyster. They're actually filtering the water, so they reduce turbidity, which enables submerged aquatic vegetation, whether it's eelgrass or kelps, to grow better because more sunlight hits them. They're increasing biodeposition. They're returning nitrogen to the atmosphere. They sequester carbon. They provide what's called biogenic habitat, so for other species, so they can increase species diversity. And the downside is pretty darn minimal. I mean, compared to growing, you know, lettuce in Chimicum Valley, it's barely even worth a mention. I mean, they're really done correctly. I have to put that caveat in. Shellfish aquaculture is one of the least impactful means of food production. And so the flupsy in particular, there's definitely a localized impact. There's some shading of the substrate, but the movement of the water in a marina through a flupsy, the oysters are actually helping clear the water, which is good. And they're, in a way, for, you know, environmental protection, they're like the canary in the coal mine, because if there's a spill of something in the marina and a bunch of little baby oysters die, that's going to be the first thing people notice. So I don't see a huge downside of a flupsy, other than it takes some space and it will do some shading. But yeah, aside from that, I mean, there's the noise factor, that there is some noise from the water movement and the motor, and then the sorting of the seed. But in general, it's a pretty, you know, pretty easy on the environment, if not a net benefit.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Kurt Grinnell of the Jamestown Sklallam Tribe and Brent Vodopoulos of Washington Sea Grant. So my next question to you, Brent, is I understand there's some bleach used, but very trace amounts. Is this true? Or is that something I misread somewhere?
I don't believe any bleach is used in a flupsy operation. Okay. It's just water.
Chemicals at all?
But Kurt could probably answer that better than me, but I can't. I don't know why you'd use bleach.
Yeah, no, we don't use bleach or anything. We do use a pressure washer to rid the bins of growth, but that's it. So no, there's no chemicals coming off our. Okay. You know, any oil that is run in the electric motors is food grade oil.
So I have a question about Point Hudson, and this is sort of to digress, but would you guys have to relocate the device every time the Wooden Boat Festival comes to town? And if so, is that a problem to move these things around?
Well, in the certain slip or spot on the dock that they're looking, it's I don't know that boats go back there anyway, so I think you'd be okay. It's just another dock sitting there in the back against the shoreline, and against the between the shoreline and the dock. I really don't know that we'd be taking any other slips. Be kind of tucked away, if you know what I mean there.
Yeah. Now, if and when you do install a device at Point Hudson, would you put any sort of interpretive kiosk or educational infrastructure there as well?
Yeah, that would be one of the major draws to our flupsy area, and the learning, the teaching of the whole project. we would have some kiosks and signs. We would hope to be partnering with people or entities into the community to bring young people down, teach them what exactly aquaculture is, and teach all about oysters. And also, we would give tours if people want to come down there and ask questions. Our folks have always been real good about answering questions, and people really enjoy coming down. It's a good learning experience for anybody.
So, Kurt or Brent, how do you see the Flupsy application like this helping the tribe's desire for a more robust and sustainable shellfish industry?
Well, I think the word is sustainability, and we have a thing that we say at the tribe. A tribe isn't truly sovereign unless you can feed yourselves, unless you can feed your own people. So sovereignty is food sovereignty, and it's really important us to look many years, decades into the future, watching the population grow on the planet, around the world. We know that we're going to one day be taking care of ourselves, and it can't just be, eating red meat every day. Our people are suffering from diabetes and obesity and other problems from diet. We want to revert back to where we once were and eat more shellfish, finfish, that sort of thing. So that's why we're working hard in the aquaculture industry to help facilitate our future, our people's future, and make sure that they can feed themselves in a sustainable and less impactful way of growing high-end protein, high-quality protein.
So Brent, do you have anything to add to that as an industry expert?
Yeah, well, it was a few years ago that worldwide aquaculture production exceeded wild capture fisheries. And I think that what we need to do as a culture, and here in the United States especially, is come up with sustainable solutions to growing our food. There are lots of problems with different forms of aquaculture that I think our expertise here in the U.S. can really focus on and help address. And, I think seafood still is the number two trade deficit sector in the United States. We import so much seafood. And so growing our own at home makes a lot of sense, but we want to do it in an environmentally sustainable way. And that's where you land squarely on sustainable shellfish aquaculture, and where, most shellfish aquaculture uses very, very little, pesticides or herbicides or fertilizer. And if you think about, how you grow that head of lettuce in Chimicum Valley, it's grown right here, but we're probably bringing in to growth of that. And where it's growing is, it's a healthy farm, but it's not a natural environment anymore, because we're adding things and tilling and all the things you do to grow that head of lettuce. And what's really nice about shellfish aquaculture is, once you get it out of the hatchery, you don't add anything. It is eating phytoplankton that naturally occurs in our waters. It's clarifying the water. It's doing all sorts of ecosystem services. And it's a pretty gentle touch on the environment. I mean, does it have an effect? Of course it does. Everything we do does affect the environment. But in terms of benign food production, it's right up there at the top.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I gather that the whole industry uses this sort of equipment, like Taylor shellfish. Other growers use Flupsy. So most of the oysters that we eat, I assume, come through the Flupsy process. Is that correct? Either one of you can answer that.
Yeah, Kurt
probably knows better than I do.
Well, I think there is a certain amount of recruitment out there for wild stock. You know, a person has a beach out there and you add shell down on the beach, and you do recruit, have a natural recruitment out there for oysters. But unfortunately, with acid acidification, ocean acidification, excuse me, and climate change, we're getting less and less recruitment, whether it's gooey duck or oysters. We're having trouble out there. And so we're starting to see that we get a lot better success rates by raising our own in hatcheries, a lot more consistency and a lot more production. So I think that we have to, again, run two parallel tracks where you're working diligently to try to save this planet, you know, your habitat, and make sure that our oceans and our shellfish are there for our future generations. But also, how do you set aside some time and efforts into aquaculture to make sure that you also kind of guarantee that? So again, that's where the tribe is heading now, and so are other tribes are also doing the same thing.
So what have you seen in your operations or in your environment that point to ocean acidification?
Well, I was just reading a study in 2005 where the state of Washington DNR was doing some gooey duck surveys, and the majority of the gooey duck were between 35 and I think 60 years old. And that tells me, you know, that they're not even back then they weren't seeing a lot of recruitment. And so we see it being on the front lines like we are, even when we try to spawn and set oysters in our shellfish hatchery here in Brennan, we might get maybe a 1 or 2% success rate. But when we spawn them in Kona with cleaner water, more pure water, pH balanced water, it's more like 15 to 25%. So you can kind of see, even with the condition we have today, that we struggle, and that's why we have our operations located in Kona, where we pump our water up from 2,500 foot. Wells over there. So we're dealing this, Taylor's is dealing with this, you know, people in Oregon and hatcheries are dealing with buffering 100% of their waters into their hatchery. They're buffering to balance the pH. I think it's a nationwide issue. It's something that we all have to look at. And I can promise you that our children will be looking hard at it and wonder why we didn't work harder toward those, you know, the goals of straightening things out.
So you just mentioned Kona. Are you referring to Kona, Hawaii? So this process starts in Kona, Hawaii.
Sure. Our operations start in Kona, Hawaii, and we have a whole crew over there that we send our brood stock. They hold our brood stock, and they do all of our spawning there, and they boost our seed up big enough to where it can survive over here, basically. And then it comes into our other hatchery here at Point Whitney, and it's boosted again. We get it ready to maybe, you know, like a 3 millimeter, we call them 2380s, and then they go into our nursery systems called floating upweller systems. And the floating upweller system is that flupsy that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. And Kurt, can you describe, how you receive, you know, how many seed you receive from Kona at a time? And it's just in a little FedEx box, right? I mean, we're talking it's in a little tiny bundle of.
Yeah, we get 5 million small seed in the size of a shoebox or smaller, and they ship it overnight to us, and basically the little seed thinks the tide's out, and we keep them nice and cool in there. They're packaged properly. And then they get over here and they're put into the hatchery, into our systems here.
So now these are the Olympia oysters. And did you say gooey ducks as well? Are there what species do this process through?
Okay, so these are for the Pacific oysters. We are not yet doing that for our Olympias.
Okay.
But we think that we can do it. My general manager has confidence that we can do it. And so we're gonna begin that process. Gooey duck is another thing that we do right here, right at Point Whitney. We're gonna go out and get about 80 gooey duck for brood stock, and they will condition them here at the hatchery, and they will spawn them and grow some gooey duck seed too.
Okay. So I have another question for you. So what other species is the tribe looking at growing in an aquaculture sense? I mean, I heard word of black cod or sable fish. I think those are both the same fish, right?
Yeah, they are. We do have a sable fish operation in partnership with NOAA and the University of Washington, and that is taking place down at the Manchester site. And we have four pens, and with about 8,000 to 10,000 sable fish, they're getting pretty good size now. I think they're probably about 1.5 pounds, and they're doing really well. And the first harvest we did a couple of years ago, we had 44,000 pounds out of those pens. So we feel like we're doing pretty good. They're an all female species. We harvest them at about 2.5 kilos, and they're great fish and very hardy.
What's the market for that particular fish? Who do you sell that to?
Yeah, it's mostly Asia. Japan is a real big market for us. And so that's, you know, and as much as we can in the U.S. too, but really it's Japan.
Yeah, I know they like gooey duck as well. Anything from the sea.
That's right.
So, Brent, do you have anything to add before we go? Like to say anything, Brent?
I would just urge listeners to learn about the sustainability of different aquaculture operations. I mean, there's a wide variety of operations, some good, some bad. And from the science side, there's a lot of effort towards greater sustainability that's happening right now, especially for pinfish and also shellfish. So
thank you, Brent and Kurt, for speaking with us today. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Ku Ich for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a good day. How do I see you?